money will soon go out for the struggling across this city, and there's more of a plan to open Duval County back up. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, we've got a closer look at the mayor's plan to reopen Jacksonville for business, and we'll answer your questions about the stimulus debit cards the city of Jax is going to be giving out to people who need them. What are your questions? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, how you can get outside and enjoy a bit of wild Florida this spring, pandemic or no pandemic. But first this hour, we've got the latest numbers for you on the COVID crisis. Statewide, the Florida Department of Health is reporting 32,138 cases and 1,088 deaths. Here in our area, Northeast Florida, there are now 1,625 reported cases and 41 deaths, including one new one recorded. It's an 80-year-old woman who passed away in Duval County. Now, on Monday, Mayor Curry encouraged businesses in Jacksonville to begin planning for how they'll operate when the local economy opens back up.
The city of Jacksonville is meeting the benchmarks established by the White House to begin phase one of reopening our city. Restaurants, lodging, and retail should begin planning and preparing for a return to business at some time in the near future. Businesses should start formulating plans that incorporate proper social distancing and CDC sanitation guidelines. For restaurants, that may mean spacing your diners at least 6 feet apart, checking your employees' temperatures, having them wear masks, and regularly sanitizing your dining areas and kitchens. For retail, that may mean limiting person-to-person contact, wearing masks, and possibly limiting the number of customers you allow in at one time. We will give more specific guidance when we get to where a decision has been made to gradually and methodically reopen some of these establishments.
Now, the mayor didn't give a date for when Jacksonville will begin reopening businesses, but he did note there has been a consistent dip in the number of people testing positive for COVID-19 compared to the total number tested. That gives authorities some confidence that the curve has been flattened enough that they can take tentative steps to reopen. Now, later in the day, the Jacksonville City Council also unanimously approved a $159 million stimulus plan for this city. Everyone's wondering, how will that money be doled out? Who qualifies? We're going to take a closer look at both of these stories right now as we welcome Tim Gibbons, editor of the Jacksonville Business Journal. He's on the line. Hi, Tim.
Hi, how are you this morning?
I'm great. Thanks for calling in. And here's our question to callers. We want to know, what's your reaction to the mayor's announcement about soon reopening the city of Jacksonville? And what are your questions about the $159 million stimulus package that Duval County citizens will be able to access if they need help paying rent, mortgage, and utilities? Give us a call. Give us a call. It's, 549-2937 to join us. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, and our Facebook page is open too. Well, Tim, let's begin with the mayor's announcement about how businesses can be resuming operations in the near term, he says. What is the business community? Yeah, what is the business community saying about this that you're hearing as editor of the Business Journal?
So people obviously are looking forward to being able to reopen, to be able to get back to business. But there is a general sense that people talk about like getting back to normal, and this isn't going to be getting back to normal. It's going to be a new normal. So I think a lot of what the thinking that is going into this is the idea that if you're going to reopen, you have to take steps, you have to do things. In many cases, these are steps that businesses are taking anyhow. If you've been to a supermarket recently, for example, you've probably seen plexiglass shields by the cashiers. Things like that basically will allow businesses to operate, but operate in a safe fashion. So if you're a restaurant, the number of seats that you had in the past, you're not going to have that number of seats anymore, at least in the short term. So the idea of planning is to start now thinking about how do you arrange your dining room. If you're a retailer, how do you mark out social distancing? How do you keep your cashiers safe? What are the steps you have to take so that we adjust to the new reality?
949-2937 to join us. Obviously, businesses want to have customers again and get back open. I think the big unknown we're all looking at is, will the customers return? Will they feel comfortable going into businesses? Will they feel that it's safe?
That's exactly what we're hearing from businesses, that although there is a lot of rhetoric around the country on, you know, reopen everything, as we talk to business owners, they're concerned about their own safety. And most of them seem to understand that it doesn't matter what the government says to a certain extent. If customers don't feel safe, they're not going to come back. So one of the things that's been a very, very small silver lining that's been great about covering business on the First Coast over the past 2 months has been seeing the creativity and ingenuity that businesses have brought to this as they try to deal with the crisis. And I think we'll see that same creativity as we move forward, where businesses go, I want my customers to feel safe. I want my workers to feel safe. Here are the things that we will do that will let people come back. Yes, different than it was earlier in the year, but in a way that people can adjust to.
You know, we spoke about that just the other day with a great lady, a former contributor to this program. It's Lee Court of the Women's Food Alliance. Mm-hmm. She has extensive contacts throughout the culinary and hospitality and tourism worlds in Northeast Florida and South Georgia. You can find the Women's Food Alliance on Facebook or online. And she's been talking to business owners in this sphere. And of course, it's a huge part of our Florida economy. Lee had some thoughts about what's going on in the hospitality industry and how people are trying to reinvent their businesses and reinvent themselves. Let's listen.
What I'm learning is that everybody is trying to reinvent not only what they're doing for their businesses, if they're able to keep their businesses open, but their talents, their capabilities. Like a chef is learning how to do social media, and a restaurateur is learning how to be a chef. So I think people are multitasking to do whatever they need to keep going right now and to be positive. I think everybody is working hard to keep their morale up and to keep their people close to them, no matter what part of the industry they're in.
And that's Lee Court of the Women's Food Alliance. Tim, people are dancing as fast as they can right now in so many ways, trying to figure out how they're going to get through the next weeks.
Yes, in multiple ways. I mean, obviously, there's the creativity that you see with employees. We're in the midst of doing a kind of a major look in partnership with the business journals across the country, looking at small businesses and how they're dealing with this. And one of the things that we keep on hearing is that idea of nobody's job is the same, that you were a supermarket cashier and now you're doing something else in the supermarket, which is good for some people and not good for others. I don't want to be too Pollyanna-ish about it. Obviously, that's disruptive for many people, but it is that idea that people are finding new ways to use their talents. But that dancing to keep things going, it's a challenge. I mean, the second round of the PPP program was on rolled yesterday and once again just had major problems, which is very frustrating.
Didn't they run out in a few minutes of the money? I mean,
the website crashed. The website crashed. It opened up at 10:30 and it crashed for the first time at 10:32.
Oh my goodness.
Now, there are First Coast banks that are still trying to force applications through, but it's a very real frustration out there.
Now let's talk, speaking of the PPP, the Paycheck Protection Program, let's talk about the local money that the Jacksonville City Council approved. It's a $159 million stimulus package that they've acquired from the Federal CARES Act. That's the congressional act trying to provide relief around the country. A quarter of this money will go to Duval County residents who need help paying rent, mortgage, and utilities. And, you know, people are going to be clamoring for this money, Tim. They'll get it in the form of a $1,000 prepaid debit card that they can pick up at the Ed Ball Building or the main library. They'll have to make an appointment. People are wondering what the criteria is for them to qualify for this. Do we know that?
We do. It's fairly minimal, but it's fairly strict at the same time. So you have to live in Duval County, obviously. You had to have household income of less than $75,000 at the time of application, and you had to have had a job on February 29th. You also have to certify that you've lost income. I believe it's a quarter of your income due to the pandemic. The idea is this money is supposed to go and help those most in need. So, you know, household income less than 75 and you've lost a quarter of that.
And how do you demonstrate that? How are they going to demonstrate that?
Some of those things are still being worked out. There is a form that will be filled out. You're supposed to bring your pay stubs, which is how you'll show that you had a job. I don't think it's clear yet how you'll show that you've been affected. I assume that you can bring pay stubs from February 29th and now, but it's somewhat unclear to me how, if you've lost your job, you'll demonstrate that, but particularly considering the problems with applying for unemployment that the state has seen. But one of the other questions that has not yet totally been clarified is what a household means. Obviously, there's an individual living by themselves or a family that would fall under a household. It's not yet clear how roommate situations, for example, would be treated.
Let's go to some calls as we speak with Tim Gibbons of the Jacksonville Business Journal. What are your thoughts about Jacksonville reopening for business? And what are your questions about whether you qualify for $1,000 in stimulus the city is providing to people who are out of work? 549-2937 to give us a call. Ron is in Jacksonville. Hi, Ron. Good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, great. I've worked in Jacksonville going on 9 years. My driver's license shows an address where I own a home in Lake Mary,
mm-hmm.
but I've lived in Jacksonville for 9 years in July. So my question is, if I take my driver's license in, is that going to be an issue in terms of demonstrating that I qualify?
Do you have maybe a utility bill that shows your address?
I do.
I would bring that.
Okay, so it's not going to be limited to a driver's license.
You know what, Tim? I don't know the answer to that. If he brings in his JEA bill, would that work?
Right. Well, I know that you're allowed to bring in pay stubs, bank statements, and letters from employers when it comes to employment. I know the library system will use a variety of bills, for example, to prove your address. There is training, as I said, that's going on this week, and it would seem likely that driver's license is not the only acceptable form of ID because not everyone has a driver's license. So it seems unlikely that's the only thing that they would point to. Bank statements obviously would be another way that could be a potential way of proving where you live.
And Ron, tell us about your employment situation. What happened with you?
Well, it's an interesting situation. I got laid off by J.P. Morgan Chase.
Mm-hmm.
Our team got rifted. And so then I applied for work at the Census Bureau. And I was employed on February 29th by the Census Bureau as a field supervisor. And now the Census Bureau is sort of in limbo as to how they're going to go forward with completing the census. So our hours were reduced. We were still working, but we were working from home. And then as of last Friday, I think we're just not going to continue to be paid until they decide how they're going to go forward with completing the census.
I see. Well, I certainly hope you get the money, and you do have to make an appointment, Tim. So he needs to contact the city, set up his appointment, and hope for the best, right?
Yes, exactly. I mean, and more information will be forthcoming on that. And obviously, this is one of those situations that can be frustrating, but from all accounts, the city is trying to lock down a bunch of these details and make sure that staff is fully trained before there's an influx of people. Things like making sure there's enough masks on hand. Basically, plans are to have both the people giving out the prepaid debit cards and the people picking them up will both have to wear masks. So the last thing the city wants is for this way of trying to help people who have been financially hit to then turn into a way of the virus being spread. So there's precautions being taken and training being done to make sure that doesn't happen.
Ron, good luck to you. Thanks for calling in, too.
Can I ask one quick ancillary question?
Yeah.
I guess they're going to figure out how the appointments will get made.
Yes, they will. You will have to set an appointment if you go.
Yeah, but But they haven't decided how the appointment will be made.
No, not yet.
In other words. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Good luck. And it's 549-2937 to join us as we talk with Tim Gibbons of the Jacksonville Business Journal. You know, let's get back to the reopening of the city, Tim. There's sort of a debate going on about this on our First Coast Connect Facebook page.
I'm shocked. On social media? Really?
I know. Shocking, isn't it? I'm shocked there's gambling going on here. David writes, those who don't know history are doomed to repeat it. Welcome to the past. It's 1918, and the first wave of the flu pandemic has ended. The public foolishly ignores warnings and begins to congregate again. The second wave emerges and kills many previously healthy people who survived the first wave. Get angry at these facts if you want, but that's what happened. 2020, he says, is the new 1918. And so this is a divisive issue. Not everyone agrees with the plan to reopen Jacksonville for business. Some people can't wait for it. Others are very fearful.
Yes, and that is a strange time that something it feels strange to say that something like this is being politicized, that you know we should just be focused on the health and safety. But you know, as the person on Facebook alluded to, any decision like this does have political overtones. I mean, you go back and look at the anti-mask movement in San Francisco back during the 1918 pandemic.
Mm-hmm. There was actually a group called the Anti-Mask League.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is, honestly, I mean, how that's not in a comic book, I don't know. But I think there are people who very much, they want to get out of the house and they want to get their hair cut. And there are those who probably on one end don't feel that the pandemic is being treated too seriously, that people are overreacting. But putting them aside, because that gets into a different type of conversation, I think the vast majority of the First Coast, of the businesses that we talk to, they want to be open. They want to have money coming in. They want to feed their families. They want to pay their employees. There is a frustration that this is the world we live in, but they also realize that it's not flipping a switch and just everything gets back to normal. I mean, you look at businesses, concert halls, you know, people forget what the government says. Most people do not want to sit cheek to jowl with a stranger for an extended period right now, no matter what they're allowed to do. So that's kind of the issue that businesses are dealing with, or what do they have to do to keep their employees safe and to make customers feel safe enough to come back. You saw that even before the shutdown, though, where you had local movie theaters that put into place distancing between seats. Okay, you can come and sit in the movie theater, but you're 6 feet from anybody else. That will be enough to make some people feel safe and start doing those things that they did in the past.
Yeah, it's 549-2937 to join us. Lots of tweets coming into the show. Meanwhile, here is one from Katie. I got tested for COVID-19 yesterday after reporting to a Baptist telehealth doctor. I had a 100.7 fever, chills, aches, and shortness of breath. I've been wearing masks and gloves and social distancing and isolating since mid-March. I think it's still too soon to reopen. I wish people would take this more seriously because I wouldn't wish my current symptoms on my worst enemy, she says. And so that's that's a reminder that the virus is still with us, even though the good news is that in Jacksonville, cases do seem to be declining.
That's always a problem, and I'm sure there's some term for it in the public health field, but this idea that when we do something painful and challenging, like social distancing, like self-isolating, safer at home, that we end up having an effect, at which point everybody goes, oh, okay, everything's fine. So we go back to doing these things that made everything fine. We stop staying at home because the problem is gone, except the problem's only gone because we were staying at home. It is interesting in talking to people, both in doing journalism and just in personal life, the closer people are to somebody who's been affected by this, the more they look around and go, people aren't taking it seriously. Once you know someone who's died from it, once you know someone who's lived through it, it becomes much easier to go, this is something I don't want happening to myself, to loved ones, to the rest of the city. Mm-hmm. And I think there always will be there will be a continuum. People who see this as being something that we all have to be on total lockdown for months on, and people who go, we can't survive doing that. How do we get back to work safely?
Ed is on the line down on Blanding Boulevard. Good morning, Ed. I bet for once Blanding Boulevard doesn't have a lot of traffic, right?
Yes, you're right. It reminds me of, remember, I forgot who it was that once said, a billion here, a billion there. Pretty soon we're coming, we're talking about a lot of money. I think right now we're going a trillion here, a trillion there. My question is, I think we're so obsessed with the current situation, and understandably so. My question is, we know very well from history, this won't be the last pandemic, maybe completely different virus. It won't be we'll have a next downturn in the economy like 2008. We're going to have a few wars coming up, and we're going to have, who knows what, 9/11, another one coming up. Where are we going to come up with the funds to take care of those emergencies that will happen when we are really scraping in the bottle of the barrel right now?
All right, Ed.
We're being short-term.
Thanks for that.
Short-term thinking.
Sure.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Tim.
That sounded like the voiceover at the beginning of a post-apocalyptic film. If we get another 9/11, while all of this is happening, I don't think that anybody is planning for multiple black swans, showing up at once. That is a very real question and issue, and this is where political decision-making, plays a role, and what do you think the role of government is, and all of that sort of thing, where at some point the money does run out, although, you can look and say, in the way our economy is set up now, we're probably actually kind of a long way from that. But if another horrible tragedy hits, that you can't really plan for that.
Yeah. Michael in Arlington. Hey, Michael, good morning to you. How are you?
I'm great, thank you.
Hey, go ahead.
My question is, I know this is serious, but how many people die from the regular flu every year versus the coronavirus flu every year?
Okay, I'm glad you asked that. We get asked that a lot. Here is the reality of the situation. The coronavirus is at least 10 times more deadly than the flu. 0.1% of people who get the flu every year die. But between 4 and 5% of people who get coronavirus are dying. So the lethality of this is why it's so serious. Far more people who get this virus die of it than die of the flu. So I hope that answers your question, Michael. Thanks for that. And Tim, we have gotten a lot of calls about this where people have said, we should have reopened a long time ago because this is no different than the flu. And that's just simply not the case. This is far deadlier than the flu.
There is. And not to, I would never come on your show and insult any of your callers, but I think it's important for people to, no, seriously, but I don't think that people are being malicious when they make those type of comparisons.
No, but we just want to make sure they understand. Yeah.
Right. And it is a radically different thing from a whole bunch of reasons, not the least that the numbers we're comparing are not derived the same way. We don't actually do testing for every flu case. We basically do a rough guesstimate to see how bad flu is this year, and we're fine with that. COVID-19 deaths if anything, they're undercounted. We only right now are counting them as deaths if a test has been done.
People can get a shot for the flu and have some protection against it. Yeah. And there's no vaccine for this. There's no immunity to this that we know of. That I think those are why this is the difference. So finally, then, let's get back to the questions that are continuing to come in to us about the stimulus money. People are wondering if they can, if they can learn more online, if they can. Gosh, there are so many questions coming in. I can't even get to them all. Here's one. Can I apply online for this money? I believe the answer to that is no. You must make an appointment and go downtown wearing a mask and apply that way. Tim, right?
That is my understanding as well. I believe there was talk of other forms of applications, but as of yet, there is absolutely no online way of doing it.
Right. So unfortunately, for people that are concerned about the virus, you will have to apply in person for a $1,000 prepaid debit card via the City of Jacksonville. as the city council has approved a $159 million stimulus to help
the
people.
The city is working with JTA to help people who do not have transportation get to those two downtown sites that you mentioned. So that will help ease some of those concerns.
Right. And not all of the money is going to individuals. There will be more money for testing, small business grants. They're even giving money to places like the zoo and the symphony. And there's been some criticism of a slush fund in this that hasn't gotten much oversight. So that's something we'll need to watch too.
That is the part of this. And on the one hand, it is very good that both the local and the federal government are providing these fundings. That always does lead to questions, though, about oversight. And there are parts of this that I think, particularly on businesses getting money, that will have people ask questions, as we should. There's also changes in there where various fees for anybody in the construction industry, which we cover a lot, mobility fee waivers, fire permit fee waivers. There's also a bunch of things that will help, hopefully, spur and make easier doing construction. So that will be an outcome of this. It's not money going to construction companies, but it's the city not charging fees that they have in the past.
And we'll continue to report on how you can set up your appointment for the stimulus money. Everyone just keep listening to this radio station or check out our website, wjct.org. We'll have regular updates on this. And we want to thank you, Tim Gibbons, editor of the Jacksonville Business Journal. Always great to have your insights.
Quite glad to be here. Stay safe.
Thank you. You too. Much more still ahead later in the hour, how you can still enjoy a bit of wild Florida during this pandemic. But up next.
There was a lot of cholera, typhoid, and things like that. And people were just perishing in large numbers.
Everything old is new again as we speak to Jacksonville author B.B. LeClaire. His new book, The Secret War of 1834, looks at an American pandemic of nearly two centuries ago. Back in a moment.
Citizens Property Insurance. Whether recovering or preparing, Citizens is available. Claims can be tracked at citizensfla.com or reported by calling a live Citizens rep 24/7.
Introducing the Jacksonville Music Experience from WJCT, offering music lovers a variety of ways to enjoy favorite artists and discover new genres. Download the WJCT app or visit wjct.org/jacksmusic to start listening today. April is Jazz Appreciation Month, and Electro Lounge Radio 89.9 FM HD4 celebrates the heritage and history of jazz every Sunday from sunrise to sunset. So tune in to Electro Lounge Radio 89.9 FM HD4 or online at wjct.org/jacksmusic and explore the roots of jazz from old favorites to fresh new jazz. We play it all every Sunday on Electro Lounge Radio. Jazz, America's original art form. Part of the Jacksonville Music Experience from WJCT.
Welcome back. First Coast author William LeClaire, along with his daughter Becky, recently published a book about a virulent pandemic that swept America almost 200 years ago. Little did he know that when he first started writing, how timely his story would be today. I spoke with him about this new tale. It's called The Secret War of 1834. Bill LeClaire, thanks for being with us.
Absolutely.
So take us back to 1834. This is an amazing story you and your daughter Becky have written, and there are echoes in what we're experiencing today. What was happening in America in 1834?
Well, the story that is accepted of what's going on in America is there was a lot of cholera, typhoid, and things like that, and people were just perishing in large numbers because they didn't know how to deal with these things. The medical profession at that time was still practicing in large the teachings of Socrates, the four humors, the blood, the bile, the spit, and they believed that bleeding would help get these humors in balance and you would heal. Didn't do a lot of good. We know this now, but they didn't know that then, except there were people who doubted it. And our doctor, Gregory Periwinkle, was one of those who doubted it, and he went to find a better way. So he went out to meet with the Indians in the West, which at that point was Chicago, met a friend named Howakin, the medicine man of his tribe. The two of them are working together to find cure for tuberculosis, cholera, these other things.
And then what happened?
Well, he's experimenting with animals and different types of herbs, drugs, and phosphorus and things like that. And one of the animals, one of the rats unknown to him, had rabies. And so all of these things kind of combined and fused into this one terrible affliction. And one of the members of the Indian tribe caught it and started spreading it. The rat got away, also started spreading it, and it very quickly runs out of control, and they have to get it back in control. Unlike the coronavirus, this forms up in something like zombies. Zombies wasn't invented yet, or the term wasn't, but people turn into rabid, carnivorous, zombie-like beings,
wow.
Which it is a work of fiction, to be honest, but it is something that can leave questions as to did this happen. And we did a lot of research in this and based a lot of the events around actual events so that if somebody were to look it up, they could go, well, maybe this did happen.
Okay.
A lot of the names in there are actual names. All of the inventions and stuff that they kind of put together to combat this thing, the inventors are real, the inventions were real, everything was very possible at that time.
And so you and your daughter, did you start working on this, I would think, way before we hit the pandemic we're in now?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
So what are your thoughts now that you're publishing this in the midst of a global pandemic?
Good and bad luck. You know, I mean, it's interesting. I don't know if people are going to, because of the pandemic, be more excited about this book or less, you know, having heard a lot of it all the time. But I've been told by a couple of people who've read it that this thing parallels so closely what we're going through now, which I take as a compliment, because we're kind of guessing. We're thinking if there was a, you know, the government became aware of this, what would they do and how would they do it? And so there are some parallels.
What would you say are the biggest parallels?
Trying to get people away from the attack while the experts go in and counter the attack. You know, here again, this isn't just a virus that's silent. This is hordes of these afflicted people that the Indian tribes in our book call them the Wintiko, which is an Indian term for a living dead demon type of a creature. And so they have to go after it and, you know, counter it, but they have to do so in a different way. They have to reinvent the way they're doing things, like we're doing now. The world has never seen anything like this, so we have to reinvent the way we combat it. And so they have to reinvent the way they combat it.
Now, this book is available on Amazon. Obviously, right now you can't go around town and do book signings, but maybe in the future?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Be delighted. We ordered cases, lots of these books, planning on going to, you know, conventions and bookstores and everything like that. And we got them in just in time. We went on one of the last cruises out. When we left for the cruise, it was not a big deal. It was something that was happening over in China. And we had minor concerns. By the time we got back, the world had changed. We were only gone a week. And mm-hmm. By the time we got back, everything was shut down. Now we're sitting here with a bunch of books and a bunch of plans that we just kind of have to put on hold.
That's right. But in the meantime, people can order your book, The Secret
Absolutely.
War. It's The Secret War of 1834 by Jacksonville's William LeClaire and his daughter, Becky. William LeClaire,
right.
A pleasure. Thank you for being with us.
Anytime. Anytime. Thank you for having me.
Back in a moment.
You belong among the wildflowers.
You know, I am a lifelong Tom Petty fan, and there's so many of his songs I just love so much. But if I had to pick my all-time favorite Petty song, I think it would be that one, Wildflowers. It just almost makes me cry every time I listen to it, and especially now. Here's the thing. Spring has sprung. The wildflowers are blooming. The fish are biting. And some parks and outdoor spaces are reopening right now. Our regular contributor, Lisa Gruber, a Florida master naturalist, is looking into this, and she's going to take us outside right now for a little taste of wild Florida. Hey, Lisa.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to talk to you. So I was so soothed by a little bit of Petty's Wildflowers. People are looking to nature right now for solace during this pandemic, you're finding, yes?
Yeah, I really think so. I had a really nice note from a forester with the Forest Service after our last show last month. And part of what he wrote was that this is time to take a break in nature, a moment to take a deep breath and appreciate the beauty in little things. And that is, you know, how I feel also. People who are rejuvenated by nature seem to be so because they pay attention to the details of whatever it is that interests them, whether it's birds or wildflowers, or fishing, hunting. Our ancestors were much more attuned to the outdoors, and you know, they didn't have indoor air conditioning, so they tended to just be more in touch with what was going on outside and more observant. They didn't have the entertainment options that we have, so they saw what was in bloom and what birds were, you know, in their area. And I think if right now we calibrate our attention to those details in our neighborhoods and our region, that can help get us outside of ourselves and put us in touch with the exact same things that our ancestors always paid attention to. And I think there can be some comfort in that.
Absolutely. You know, my grandfather was a farmer, and he knew it was going to rain way before the weather report told him it would. I mean, it was just incredible. He was so close to the land. And, you know, it's funny. We are getting back to that because everyone's out walking now. They're biking because there's not much else to do. But there are some things that you want to point people's attention to, right, that are opening up.
Sure. Well, so, you know, we may have been on lockdown, but nature has not. And it's doing what it always does in the spring. It's blooming and regenerating. We're right in the middle of spring here in Northeast Florida. The days are longer. We have 48 more minutes of daylight today than we had 1 month ago. And daylight is going to continue to increase all the way through the summer solstice in June, June 21st. So we're going to get long evening sunsets. We've still got very mild temperatures. Somebody posted yesterday on social media that it feels like San Diego here. We've been having 60 degrees in the morning, up to 80 in the afternoon, beautiful breezes. We've had a few afternoons that have gotten towards 90, but in general, we've still just had very lovely weather. The water temperature is increasing, and so I know that makes the fishermen in my house happy because the fish are biting again.
Yeah,
so,
and it has been glorious, the spring weather. Now, we listened to Wildflowers a minute ago. You want to point people's attention to the wildflowers blooming at this time.
Sure. The May moon is called the flower moon, and historic cultures called it that because of the abundance of wildflowers in the spring. In Florida, we have something blooming year-round, but we have more in the spring and in the fall. And basically, you can see them anywhere. If you slow down and notice, they are blooming in the parks, the roadsides, you know, flowers coming up on the cracks in the city sidewalks, out at the beaches. In town, I'm seeing spiderwort and Queen Anne's lace, which is a beautiful white showy flower, shrub verbena, wood sorrel. I was at a boat ramp at the St. Mary's River near Folkston, Georgia recently, and there were spider lilies blooming along the edge of the water, and the wild lilies are just stunning. Also, I took a drive, and I was on Highway 23. I just went for a scenic drive just to get out of the house. And there were Easter lilies blooming along the side of the road. Mm,
nice.
Just now, gorgeous.
And there are ways you can identify flowers and birds using apps, right?
Right, right. I have an app on my phone called iNaturalist. It's a free app. And you take a picture and then you upload it into the app and it can give you an idea of what, you know, help you identify what the flower or the plant is. But in general, I don't really tend to use my phone a lot when I'm out in the field. I'm trying to be off my phone because I've got to use my phone all the time for work. So I'm just trying to be off my phone. So I concentrate on just getting a decent photo. And then I've got a flower ID book at home that I use called Florida Wildflowers by Bell and Taylor, published by Laurel Hill Press. It is so easy to use, and I always seem to be able to easily identify something I've seen in the outdoors. The Florida Wildflower Foundation also has really good information on their website. And under normal times, the county extension office, the Duval County Extension Office, gives talks on wildflowers and leads hikes, and they're not at the moment, but normally they would. And also the Florida Wildflower Foundation is offering a webinar Monday, May 4th on planting natives in your landscaping.
Very nice.
Another way to learn more.
Check that out. Okay. Some beaches, as we know, and some parks have reopened to the public. Where can people get outside right now?
So the latest in terms of the beaches is we all know that Duval County and St. John's County opened up about a week and a half ago. Flagler County beaches opened up this past Sunday, although the parking lots directly on the beaches are not open. So you have to park somewhere else and walk to the beach. Nassau County, I just spoke with someone from the county this morning, and their beaches are opening up Wednesday, May 6th. And they'll be open from 6 to noon, and that will be Peters Point South to Estate Park. And there's two parking lots open, Bernie Park at American Beach and Peters Point. The walkover lots are closed. The Fort Clinch is run by the state, and that is not open, and the City of Fernandina beaches are not open. But Nassau County beaches will be open. In general, you know, we've had our national forest, Osceola National Forest, is open. State forests are open. Our county and city parks are open dawn to dusk. The Timaquan Parks Foundation has a wonderful resource on their website. They've got a big list of everything that's been open, because as you can imagine, it's been something that's a little bit fluid to track. But there are a lot of places open.
That is so wonderful to hear. You can get out and hike, bike ride, boat, just enjoy the time. And as you wanted to leave us, one final thought as we go to break, Lisa says, find the road less traveled. Try to avoid the crowds. She is master naturalist Lisa Vick Gruba. It's Wild Florida. Thank you so much, Lisa.
Thank you, Melissa.
And in a moment, how one local artist is pivoting during this pandemic. We'll be right back.
More than 50,000 people in the U.S. have died of COVID-19. How can we comprehend this growing number?
It's the thought of people dying alone.
We'll have to wait until the other side of the pandemic to even begin to calculate who we lost.
Tomorrow is not promised. Live for today.
COVID deaths in America, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
I'm Robin Young. Will there be a second wave of care for COVID-19 patients? The disease attacks not just lungs, but kidneys, the heart, and these could be long-term impacts.
Often there are post-viral syndromes that are related to fatigue or pain or trouble concentrating that can last for long periods of time. Will that happen here? How do we help people? We need to study that.
Next time, here and now.
Today at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
The world's reporters and producers have a singular mission: to put you in touch with events around the globe that affect life here in the U.S. From the coronavirus to global trade to efforts to dial back climate change, each day we bring you fresh insights, unique voices, one-of-a-kind reporting. Join us for an hour that takes you around the globe. It's right here. It's the world. This afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Lockdowns do more than buy us time. They save lives. But how do we make sure the cost of reopening the country doesn't come at too high a price? Our new landscape will have to catch new COVID clusters and care for those most at risk. I'm Sarah McCammon, preparing for the next fight, next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, the pandemic has put some local projects on hold, of course, and that's been the case for Jacksonville-based artist Elena Olander. But she's not letting the COVID crisis slow her down. Instead, she's shifted her way of working and is now creating and selling pieces using new mediums and engaging with her fans on Instagram. She's created a new body of work called Xenophobia, and it's intended to break down stereotypes and fear. Elena Olander, good to have you on the line. How are you? Thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Miss. Thank you so much for having me.
So tell us about your latest body of work, Xenophobia. What is it featuring?
Sure. So as this pandemic has unfolded, it's been an incredible source of uncertainty, anxiety, and fear. And as the rise in cases since it broke out in Wuhan, China, and statements such as Chinese virus have been used, there's been an escalation of discrimination, hate crimes, and xenophobia toward people of Asian descent in America and around the world. So this body of work is an account of actual words used in discrimination against Asians shown in, you know, in the media, in the news, and personal accounts that have been sent to me and told to me through friends. And it's a reflection of that in the work.
Now, you are a Chinese American yourself. Have you experienced any ugliness, any racism since the pandemic began yourself?
I have, yes. In the beginning, around maybe early March, I was working. This is before the quarantine really started to take effect. I had gone to the grocery store, and in passing, someone said to me, "Go back to China." Mm. And I was, you know, kind of taken aback, and I didn't engage with them. I just kind of, you know, kept my head down and kept moving forward. I've had someone say to me that I'm not wearing the proper mask. I need to be wearing an N95 mask because I might have the virus. And I internalized it.
I'm so sorry that that happened to you. And that, I think that's why it's so important that your artwork get as wide an audience as possible. So tell us about some of these pieces, T-shirts, stickers. Why are you creating those?
Well, as this pandemic has unfolded, some things that were planned in the future, such as exhibitions and mural works, things that really sustain my living as an artist, have been canceled or postponed with dates that, you know, I don't know when or if they'll even happen. So it's just all my income that I initially expected, I had to, you know, pivot the way I approach how I can support my family and my daughter. And so really, I opened my online shop and I started, you know, asking people what they've been interested in having from me, and smaller things like stickers and T-shirts are requests. And so I just wanted to, you know, feed into that, and people have been so supportive in the community and beyond. It's been, you know, really heartwarming.
That's good to hear that you're getting more positive feedback than people saying ugly or racist things. And people can engage with you both at your website, ElenaOlander.com, or they can find you on Instagram where you've got a lively thing happening with your followers, right?
Right. Thank you. Yes.
And, you know, we need to point out that the arts have always been so instrumental in times of crisis. They really play such an important role in our cultural life. And you are supporting yourself through the sale of your art right now. So this is a way to break down stereotypes amidst the anxiety and fear spread by the pandemic and support a local artist. Her name is Elena Olander, if you're just tuning in. And you can find her online or on Instagram. And after this is over, what's next for you, do you think?
Well, I do have, again, exhibitions that were postponed, and this body of work, Xenophobia, I'm hoping to have an exhibition and bring awareness together with the visual and verbal references with the work when it's safe and I'm able to do so.
Well, we all look forward to that day. In the meantime, check out Elena online and find her on Instagram. Her new body of work is called Xenophobia. She's Jacksonville artist Elena Olander. Thanks, Elena.
Thank you so much, Melissa. Stay safe.
You too. And that's our show. Thanks so much for being with us today. And thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is the fabulous Heather Schatz. Josh Torres is our main man, show director, and he's doing a great job. Jessica Palumbo runs this newsroom and does it to perfection. And our intrepid digital editor is the great Bill Bortsfield. We always value you, too. You're a big part of what we do. Keep those emails coming to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. And if you missed anything, find the podcast of today's show at wjct.org or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll connect with you again tomorrow at 9 a.m. Stay safe. Stay calm. Keep listening. Talk to you soon.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.